continue passing the lightsaber down through maybe the family, because it's time for a new episode of Let's Talk About Star Wars with Jenny Josephson, Tom Merritt, and me, Garrett Weinzierl. Welcome back, guys.
I know one thing, Garrett.
Nope.
It's not time for this podcast to die.
Isn't it end?
Just made it a little more dramatic.
That's
for this podcast to fade.
Now you've branded it as much as you can brand podcast colloquialisms.
That'll be the new sign off now. It's time for this podcast to end.
Oh, that is that. How did I not use that on the last one? Well, whatever is. Yeah. Well, welcome back, everyone. Jenny, how has Star Wars been treating you for the last month and change?
Star Wars has been treating me really well. I'm carefully managing all of my expectations. I'm trying to stay away from spoiler sites. I'm starting to think about our Star Wars party that we have every time there's a saga movie and what I'm going to hang up in my house this year.
You're staying away from spoiler sites? That's no fun.
I mean, they happen to me anyway, but I'm not like consciously seeking them out. I'm trying to like maintain a casual flying casual.
Yeah, it's like serving lunch these days. You have to find out who's gluten-free, who's vegan, right, who's vegetarian. Talking about movies, like, okay, who's trailer spoiler-free, who's generally spoiler-free, who's rumor spoiler-free. My personal thing is, once the movie's actually out and people who have actually seen it, I don't want those people to tell me anything. Right. Yeah. I don't want someone who's seen the movie. But up until that point, rumors, leaks, I eat all that stuff up.
I think where I draw the line in my very specific like non-spoilering is I don't try and look up alleged script leaks. That's like the one thing I stay away from.
I don't pursue that stuff either. You're right. That's a good point.
Yeah. I'll tell you what is catnip for me. If you ever need to trap me in like a Looney Tunes scenario, Star Wars toy leaks is the number one way to get me. I will click on anything. You will get a virus installed on my computer immediately. It will work. I like to
find out all these things, like, well, it's going to start with Leia in on the ship, blah, 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 blah. I love that stuff because it's almost never true. But it gets my wheels turned into like, okay, what if it is? Or what if part of that is true? Or what caused that leak? Is there a, because I go back and look at all these Force Awakens rumors that came out, and 30% of them were actually what happened in the movie, and none of them were about Han. Like that was the big one.
Yeah, it was. I'll tell you, actually, really oddly specific example here. There's this one thing that was leaked with The Force Awakens that I got really excited about, and it ended up not being in the movie, but it sort of was. It was just a lamer version of it. But if you both remember, we weren't doing a show at the time, at least this show. I'm sure you all were recording a podcast alone, probably because you were so excited for Star Wars. But the concept art got leaked. A bunch of early Force Awakens concept art got leaked. And since the art book came out, it all was legit. It was all legit Force Awakens concept art. And there was one of what, I guess, one of the concepts for Rey's home in the fallen AT-AT. And one of the original concepts had the like belly hollowed out, and the quad jumper that gets blown up as they're running towards it is housed in the belly. And there was like wires,
it was like a garage.
Yeah. And there were like wires and like, you know, scrappy drapey things hanging off, and it just looked awesome. So then I saw that before the movie, and then when I went to go see the movie, I'm like, oh, she's sitting in the foot of an AT-AT. I can't wait for the wide shot. And the wide shot came, and it's just a AT-AT in the dirt. There's nothing cool going on. Yeah. The stomach isn't caved out.
A big
out.
Open area with sand blowing in.
It's like a hangar. It's the perfect idea for like a makeshift hangar. And I still think that's one of the coolest concepts I've ever seen. Yeah. And I'm so disappointed it didn't make it into the movie. But that's a super miniature nitpick. It was obviously still a movie I enjoyed quite a bit.
My feeling is like, you never know what's real and what's not. So unless you really convince yourself that something's real, that's the only way you're going to spoil yourself with that stuff.
Yeah.
If you keep a healthy skepticism about it all, then you're not sitting there being disappointed when things do or don't happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like having the what if conversations, obviously, because that's what entire podcast is. And if I shut myself off to that kind of stuff, I might as well shut myself off to being on this show, which is never going to happen. So.
Correct.
Yeah. Agree.
So around the table, we always start off with some personal jazz. Jenny, I can just feel it. What's got you, you know, what's got you jazzed for Star Wars right now?
All right. How do I say this in the least offensive way possible? So there was an awesome Twitter thing that happened the other day. And the reason I'm actually bringing this up is because of who was involved and how bad I want her on this podcast. So let's be clear. It's the only reason I'm bringing this up. So the other day, there was an executive from Lucasfilm, and her name is Jennifer Heddle, and she is this is the coolest title ever, the executive editor for fiction at Lucasfilm, and there has been like this weird thing about, okay, so maybe some humans are upset that there are women-only screenings of Wonder Woman, other property, not our business, and there have been a couple of tweets to that effect, and Jennifer Heddle, God bless her soul, found one guy's tweet, and this guy basically said, like, maybe they should do men-only screenings of Star Wars to compensate, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Jennifer Heddle writes, "We ladies at Lucasfilm will still see it before you." And I just thought, like, that may be the greatest tweet of all time, but it also was interesting for me for two actual reasons. One, I really want to talk to her about all the Star Wars books. And two, it never occurred to me that someone who works at both Disney and Lucasfilm would be allowed that level of personal expression about anything. And I thought that maybe that was like somehow indicative of like a sea change in the way that Lucasfilm employees are allowed to act. Or maybe not. I don't know. It sort of relates
or maybe
to
she
something.
Just said, let the rule book F itself. I'm going to type what I want.
It sort of relates to something we're going to talk about later, which is why I brought it up. But also just because, yeah, girlfriend. So anyway, there you go.
Well,
I want to be her best friend.
Jennifer Heddle is also following Twitter protocol if you are the employee of a large company. And in her bio says all opinions are solely mine. So she very well could have just been like, let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is pretty great, especially in a world where you expect executives to kind
sanitized
of
sanitized executive pronouncements that have no feeling, passion, or personality. Yeah, this is quite the opposite.
Yes.
Quite the opposite. And also it led to a Mashable article where it said that more than 50% of Lucasfilm's executive team is women, which is that's pretty cool. That's all. That's all I got.
Well, that is awesome.
Yeah, that's roughly in line with humanity.
Right, as opposed to many other organizations in this world. So, yeah, I was pretty all right with that.
You were the first person I saw retweet that tweet.
and all over that.
And then for the rest of the next 2 days, I just kept seeing it. And I was just like, yeah, Jenny got it first, at least for me.
I was all over that, like stink on a bantha.
Yep, Jenny loves herself some Star Wars shade. It's her favorite kind of shade to be thrown. Tom, what have you been up to?
Well, I finished Thrawn and enjoyed it quite a bit. Partway through Tarkin now, which I'm getting the parallels, not the same author, but I'm getting the parallels of people saying they liked Thrawn. The people who liked Thrawn kind of liked it for the same reasons that a lot of people like Tarkin. Although I'm only like less than a third of the way through Tarkin. And also, I bought Tarkin as part of a compilation. They bundle Tarkin and A New Dawn, which is a Star Wars Rebels novel, with three new short stories that at least at publication you couldn't get anywhere else, in a compilation called The Rise of the Empire. So the idea being you get Tarkin's story between episodes 3 and 4, and you get A New Dawn, which is a Star Wars Rebel story, which is set between 3 and 4. So it's kind of documenting the rise of the Empire, and the short stories all take place in that same area. And yeah, it's enjoyable. It's mostly just me kind of keeping time by, you know, biding my time, until the next real bit of Last Jedi stuff starts to come out. There's going to be some, you know, Road to the Last Jedi material coming out this fall that I know I'm going to eat up. But I'm just keeping my Star Wars literary tastes on simmer. And enjoying the comics, actually. The Dr. Aphra series is crossing over into the Star Wars main series on comics right now, and it's really fun.
Yeah, I bought that book, the one you were talking about, and it's on my shelf awaiting to be read. And I'm
Which really book? The Rise of the Empire?
Rise of the Empire, yeah. Oh. And I have to get back to the comics, but I don't want to subscribe to Comixology, and so I'm sort of stuck in Marvel Unlimited world waiting for more books to come out on that platform.
Mm. I'm glad you brought up the comics, because that's what I've been up to. Anyone who's been following me on my other shows realize that my voice has been on a roller coaster of quality as of late, because I've been quite sick this month. And at the peak of my illness, I laid in bed and read all of the Darth Vader comics. And it was the best time I have ever had being sick.
I was going to say, no fun being sick, but not a bad way to spend some time.
Goodness gracious. I love Vader so much. And I frequently forget how much I loved Vader as a kid. It was like my end all be all. This is my favorite thing. I had Darth Vader t-shirts, pillowcases, anything with Darth Vader on it, you name it, I had it. And this comic was just a love letter to like 8-year-old me. I had such a good time with it. And it's I don't know. I don't have this experience a lot nowadays. It's pretty much exclusively with Star Wars materials. Where it's just things where it's just like I there's no cynicism at all in my reaction to these comics. I just unabashedly loved every page of this thing.
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, and now
and they seem like they're gonna go on forever, which I like.
Yeah, because we're getting a new Vader comic. So the Darth Vader, the initial kind of launch after the Disney acquisition on Marvel and whatnot, I mean, it's a 25-issue stint and it's done, it's over, they bookended it. But we know we're getting a new one relatively soon. As a matter of fact, I sat in on a panel where they talked about it at Celebration, and it looks like it's literally picking up from like the moment Darth Vader steps off the slab at the end of episode 3. So after pick up there, and I'm going to be buying it on day one. I can't wait.
That's actually one of the nice things in Tarkin, is you get a little insight into Vader and Tarkin's relationship and how it began, and building on the fact that Tarkin and Anakin Skywalker had a relationship that you know from the Clone Wars series. So I could eat up a little more of that too.
Okay, you just sold me on Tarkin, which I've been avoiding for whatever reason. I think it was just kind of on the bubble of my interest. But if there's any of that, I'm very interested, because
I mean, I'm not saying it's a buddy comedy, but they do get sent on a mission together.
No, I'm not. I wasn't expecting that. What was some of my favorite stuff in the Darth Vader
with
comic.
Darth Vader and Wilhuff Tarkin found themselves on the road. Neither one wanted to be in charge. Please, but just the Emperor had different plans.
Oh my god. It makes me reminisce about the time Tom was a announcer in South Indiana for sporting events, because that I want to hear that whole thing.
Just ad lib that. That's a special we need to do, I think.
The University of Illinois. Let's be clear.
A lot of angry emails. Here they come.
To our listeners out there, if anyone would like to intercut what
angry
Tom...
Angry Indianans going, don't confuse us.
Now, our listeners out there, please go and intercut what Tom just did with footage of Vader and Tarkin from A New Hope. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, so if you haven't already read the Darth Vader comics, I couldn't recommend them more highly. And now I defer to you. What do I read next? Because I already I went and read all the Poe that I could, which was the first 7 issues, because that's all that's on Marvel Unlimited. Should I go back and read just the Star Wars?
Yeah, I would definitely read the main Star Wars comic if you haven't picked that up yet. And now that you know Doc Aphra, You can jump into her series too.
Yeah, that was the other thing. It was almost like in my head, I was like, I'm not going to love this character because everyone told me I'm going to love this character, but I love that character.
She's just lovable.
I left being very excited about her spinoff, so I think I'll be consuming that as well.
She's a smuggler archaeologist. Like,
I'm very concerned about her. I have some concerns in the character appropriation department. Because now she and Luke are going on adventures and they don't really trust each other and get along. And oh, by the way, where have I heard this before? And I'm not loving the fact that I feel like that character is sort of like Mara Jade in different skin.
Yeah, but it's a different time period altogether.
Yeah, but then and isn't it like a repeated beat?
I think well, it's not repeated, right? I don't know. She's not dark side either. She's more Han Solo than she is.
She's chaotic neutral.
Yeah. I could see why you'd have concerns though. I'm just trying to assuage those concerns by saying right. There's still room for Mara Jade down the line.
If you say so, Tom, I believe you. I believe Father Internet.
this is where it's interesting because I have never read the original Timothy Zahn trilogy. So
that's what you should read next, Garrett.
I know, Jax.
I'm declaring it. Take a break from the new canon material. I will even mail you my precious original books if you really want to read them and not pay for them.
I kind of would like to have those just chilling on my if I read them, I want them hanging around afterwards as my badge of honor is the point.
All right. Well, then maybe when's your birthday? What month is your birthday in?
Next year, January.
Okay. All right. Then you know what you're getting for your birthday next year.
But what I was going to say is what is interesting is obviously since I know Jack about Mara Jade, I know enough through osmosis, but not enough to, I think, have the reaction you're having, Jenny.
Yeah.
My initial reaction was, this is just a morally ambiguous Indiana Jones in space. And
yes,
and I followed it up with, and I'm really okay
and
with
that's
that.
Pretty amazing. That's pretty
I'm
awesome.
Really yeah. just, oh, I'm so okay with it. It's great. It's great. It's like Star-Lord if he was into murderous technology.
Yeah. Also, yeah, the droids are fantastic. Yeah. The murderous droids.
They're the best.
Oh, they're 000 is so it just gleeful. It's a trope that I'm such a sucker for. So anyways, moving on. There's been some happenings, some disturbances in the Force since we last got together and talked about Star Wars. And one of which is that we've got a little hint of a little I don't know, the veil being pulled back on Snoke, just a hair. We got like an eyeball behind the veil from Pablo Hidalgo himself.
Yes. So Pablo Hidalgo, who's basically like, how would you describe him, Tom, in the Star Wars universe?
I don't know. I have made a loss.
Okay, so he's the creative lead he's like one of the creative leads in the Lucasfilm story group. And he's basically like, along with another guy, basically the keepers of Star Wars truth, right? And so there was a little snippet in the novelization of The Force Awakens, which I couldn't get through because it was so poorly written, but most novelizations are. And the quote went like this: seat on the raised platform that was the focus of the chamber was the blue tinted hollow of Supreme Leader Snoke. Tall and gaunt, he was humanoid, but no human. And so, of course, like, everybody was all over this. And so Pablo Hidalgo finally told a fan that Snoke's humanity is set in stone because that sentence got published. But he also said that his non-human status was confirmed with The Force Awakens and the novel. So he's a humanoid, I guess, is the answer.
Okay, so he's not human. Is that the upshot?
Yeah, that he is a humanoid. Well, but I am unclear.
Right, like Chewbacca is humanoid.
Humanoid, okay. So yeah. So we got like just a little bit of Snokiness.
So Snoke's not a human.
Yeah.
Right. So take your theories.
Rules out a couple of people.
Yeah. Any theory involving a human, I guess, chuck it out the window.
And I think we're going to get to this a little later on in the podcast, but signs pointing to him being from a place far, far away in the far, far away are getting clearer and clearer. I think we're going to talk about a little bit about that when we talk about our books.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a large book chat here at the end of the show. But yeah, I find that interesting. The one I know I'm curious about, and this is off the cuff, but does anyone know here if the species of Darth Plagueis has been, that we have a canon answer for that?
Hold on, let me consult the Force.
I don't think we would have a canon answer anymore. I think we'd only have Legends answers.
I was about to say, yeah, I believe anything involving Plagueis
I mean, there might be some stuff kicking around. And there's a few, you know, I haven't read every single one of the novels, but.
George Lucas has said, according to Slash Film, that Darth Plagueis was a Mun, or a Moon. M-U-U-N. A thin, narrow-faced species of alien with a flair for finances. So a thin, narrow-faced species of alien does not rule out Darth Plagueis being Snoke.
Right. And even that, I at least Wikipedia, it looks like it's chalking that up to legends in there.
Yeah. So that's no longer
what
canon.
What would rule Plagueis out being Snoke to me is that he has no, he does not seem to have any force powers at all. He relies on Kylo Ren for all that.
Hmm. But. Is it just because we haven't seen it yet? Because the Emperor in the original trilogy, we don't see any real manifestation of his powers until Return of the Jedi.
I can't remember the exact quotes, but there's a few lines in The Force Awakens that imply that Kylo Ren knows how to use the Force, and Snoke knows how Kylo Ren can use the Force, but can't use it himself.
That's interesting. Okay.
I think that's a cover.
Yeah, well, I was never.
Yeah, could be.
I was never sold on any of the Snoke theories in the first place, so this is cool, but it's not like it's destroying any personal truths right. I was hoping for. But
Who knows? Plagueis, maybe the fallout of Plagueis being revived by the Emperor's magic, which would be the implication here, is that the Emperor figured out how to revive someone somehow, maybe that leaves him unable to wield the Force.
Or maybe he's only a hologram and therefore can't. You know, he's a
Force ghost. He's a Force ghost?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe.
Well, again, I'm going to hold these thoughts for later because there are several things that I read in the... Anyway, I'll hold on to it.
Okay.
Remind me again about Snoke when we get to the discussion.
Sounds good. I would just like to point out, if it is a hologram of a Force ghost, I'm rage quitting the movie.
Fair point. So the next thing, I put this one in because I'm not going to go into all the details in it because I want you guys to uncover it all yourselves, but on newsstands, June 1st will be Vanity Fair's Star Wars cover art. What is a movie? What is a magazine? I'm like losing my words. Not episode. Apparently,
issue?
Yeah. Thank you. Not stroking out here. The cover art alone is so incredible. There are four different covers. I just resubscribed to Vanity Fair to get them all for $30 because I have to hang them in my house for a Star Wars party. But the one little anecdote that's right at the top of the article, which is so great, is that, as it turns out, Mark Hamill was like not super excited to go back to Skellig Islands because where the Last Jedi temple is, and we left him at the end of the last movie, you can't helicopter to the top of it. So there's 65-year-old Mark Hamill, by the way, 65, walking up all those same steps that Daisy Ridley walked up at the end of the movie, and they had to allot an hour and a half of production time for him to do it because he had to rest every 10 minutes like I would at age 40. So anyway, that's just one little nugget. Vanity Fair has gone like full-on Star Wars crazy. They have all these videos and, of course, the amazing pictures by Annie Leibovitz, and I highly recommend, if you don't have them yet in your mailbox, go to the newsstand June 1st and get it, because they're great.
We haven't talked about the pictures on the show yet, have we?
We haven't talked about
so
any of this.
So devastating. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one.
First of all, I mean, all of these photos are amazing, but the thing for me is, it's like, yay, I have to, I have been having to deal with the loss of Carrie Fisher again. It's hard.
That's not going away.
This is just
gonna get a whole movie that she's central to.
Yes, and I feel like it's going to come up.
And that movie, I mean, they may try to tweak the ending, but as I understand it, originally that ending pointed towards her being the main character of the ninth movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big thing that came out of, I would say, the Vanity Fair fallout, which is hilarious because it's not even on stands yet, but there has been a lot of talk about about The Last Jedi, you know, since these photos came out, and that was one of the big ones, right? Was that this anecdote that apparently Carrie Fisher was saying, hey, Force Awakens was all about, Harrison Ford and Han Solo. The Last Jedi is all about Mark Hamill and Luke Skywalker. I better get the next one. And come to find out that that was actually the plan. And
yep.
Hearing that is, oh man, that's killing. I almost wish I didn't know that. I almost wish I just didn't hear that. Because in a weird way, I'm getting Dark Knight 3 feels all over again.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be, if they have a strong enough idea for the story, then it'll be all right, but it's not going to be easy. To get us onto a less introspective and sad topic, let's talk about the two reveals in Vanity Fair. Laura Dern's Vice Admiral Amelyn Holdo and Benicio del Toro's unnamed roguish looking smuggler like character.
I'm into it. I think we need a really good actress playing a vice admiral right about now.
Well, Laura Dern has pink hair, which immediately made me think of a character from Bloodline. Not Bloodline, the Netflix show. What's the name of the Claudia Gray? Oh, is that right?
Not Lost Stars, but Bloodline. Yeah.
Bloodline. Okay. Yeah. Because there's also the Netflix show. So confusing. I immediately doubted myself. But it made me think of a character from there. Thankfully, they named her, and I'm like, okay, so it's not that character, because I'm pretty sure that character's probably got blown up in The Force Awakens.
Right.
And then I'm really fascinated with not just who Benicio del Toro is, but where he is.
Yeah.
That sentence shows up.
He might be on that casino planet.
Yeah. Could be the casino planet. It's whatever it is, it's got tanks, like tanks of gas.
Yeah.
I feel like that set shows up again in. There's a short video about the photo shoot for Vanity Fair, and I want to say at least that console I saw in the whatever set they were shooting Mark Hamill on an interior.
Well, that's the other thing, is this is a Vanity Fair's photo shoot, so these sets might not even be in the movie.
That's a good point as well.
Yeah, I'm sure they didn't let them near anything that they could photograph in a...
Right.
But they probably did, but they're holding them. Like, it's under strict embargo.
Yeah, but Laura Dern and Benicio del Toro, I love equally for complete opposite reasons. These characters couldn't look more different, and I'm so jazzed with the character design.
Yeah. Basically, everything about these pictures is amazing, and I feel like I don't even really want to describe them too much other than go get the article. Go get the issue. God, guys, call me a doctor. Yeah. Also, Canto Bite, by the way, the last thing I'm going to say about this from these pictures, I pictured it as like a down home casino, but quite frankly, like, these are upscale party people. This is not like, well, this is not the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Here's my theory, and I don't even know, not claiming this is intentional. My theory is that Force Awakens mimicked the entire New Hope up through Hoth. We never got Dagobah. We never got Bespin. Mm-hmm. I think this movie will give us Dagobah at Skellig Island. That's pretty clear. We're going to get a Dagobah training scenario there, right? Because we see Rey in the trailer practicing.
Right.
And the casino planet is going to be our Bespin. That's going to be our place with, you know, the city in the skies, the fancy place. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a First Order presence there that is either a surprise or something unexpected and a betrayal. And then I think we get our Return of the Jedi like illusions for the rest of the movie.
Right. Also, should we talk about Kylo Ren's face?
Do you want to talk about the scar relocation?
Yeah.
I mean, it was mentioned by the director that it was done after a lot of prodding on Twitter that it was done because, well, a scar going up and across his nose just kind of looks dumb. And as much as that annoys me, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like what they did with Tyrion Lannister in Game of Thrones, the TV series versus Game of Thrones, the book. Like, the amount of makeup that it would have taken to give him the correct scar would have almost been like so distracting.
Except in the book to TV show translation, you get that opportunity, right? Like, yeah, this is one movie to the next. Suddenly, yeah. Scargate.
Well, exactly, yeah. Exactly. In Game of Thrones, they started with the scar where they were going to leave it. I mean, that's the kind of thing where I'm sure somebody's like, come on, JJ. Like, why didn't you think about that?
Yeah.
Well, maybe Kylo moves a lot, the scar JJ. With his force powers.
Yeah, or Bacta just ain't what it used to be.
Yeah. So I just want to touch very briefly on this one thing from, you know, I don't know if StarWarsNews.net is so legit as to trust everything they say, but it is based on a bunch of exchanges that Rian Johnson had on Twitter with a bunch of different people. And there's always been this question every time a property is acquired by Disney, just how much control Disney executives have over the movies in Marvel, in Star Wars, in whatever the other 10 things they've acquired since I finished this sentence are. In this one tweet exchange, it's basically Rian Johnson saying, like, no, you know, like, this is Lucasfilm's baby. This is Kathleen Kennedy's baby. And that, frankly, they're not planning everything out 50 movies ahead like Marvel did. They're trying to leave room for creative development and leave open ground. And that is a line of talk that they have been, like really pushing in the last couple of months. So I don't know. And Pablo Hidalgo, the aforementioned, also went on Twitter to sort of like back that up.
Well, and that's good news for Nine, because if they were planning to make Leia central, that doesn't mean that they had a plan that now is useless. It just means that was their intention. But they can still have, they could still call it audible and figure out where to go from there, which is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very good point. Out of curiosity, would either of you prefer one way to the other? Planning it out versus not?
Oh, you mean planning out versus not planning it out? I think we've seen the upside of planning it out with Marvel and the downside of planning it out with Marvel. Like, I cannot wait for like 20 years from now when there's like documentary case studies on how these Marvel movies were made, and only because it doesn't give you the ability to react to events. Like, your slate is set out, you're churning out like 3 movies a year, and that's that. But if like the entertainment landscape changes, you can't really react to it. And I think Star Wars is trying to say, like, no, we're going to keep ourselves open to all possibilities. We're not going to tell you there's going to be a Boba Fett movie in 2025 and that's the end of it. And I think that's probably better. And also, I'm for less executives involved in all things. So, you know, I'm pretty,
I don't mind. I don't, if, you know, if an executive is good, they should be involved. I'm kind of tired of the bias against executives because they're executives. The problem is
for a while, Tom.
Well, let me finish my statement. The problem is when executives who aren't good and don't know the business insert themselves because they think they are. And there are some examples. I mean, Kathleen Kennedy is an executive. I want her involved. I want her sticking her nose in because she knows what she's doing. So, you know, it's not that you don't want executives sticking their nose in. You don't want people who are unqualified and don't know anything about storytelling, telling the storytellers what to do. And that's good that that's not happening. I will
Someday
say
we'll have a whole off the record conversation about things I'm not allowed to say on podcasts.
Okay, I'm probably totally wrong. You're right.
No, you're specifically correct about there being different types of executives. In terms of executives in development, executives in general at movie studios, you are too often graced with the ones you don't want messing with your movie.
Yes,
than the
I was not trying to make a comment about the frequency of it, but as fans who just like blame the executives, it's like, okay, George Lucas was the creator and a lot of people were upset when he was involved too. So it's not as simple as just that. What you want is good people. You want good people who know how to tell stories, telling the stories. And I guess where I was going with all of that is planning out versus not planning out are two different authorial styles. And what you want is a good storytelling team who knows themselves to tell the story the way they know how to tell, right? Some authors outline and they tell great novels that way. Other authors just kind of make it up as they're writing it and they tell great stories that way. You don't want to tell the outline author that he needs to just give up the outline because he won't write a very good book that way, and vice versa. So I think to bring it all back together is you've got a great executive in Kathleen Kennedy who knows how to respect her team, her lore masters, her writers, and say, you know what? Our style here is to kind of have a couple of points we want to hit and then just let you go and tell a good story. And it's working.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think works really, really well in tandem with the writing of the novels and the comics. It gives them a lot more freedom in that regard. No. Yeah, and thank you, Tom. You have you've made me feel a lot more hopeful for the fate of Leia's character going forward in the films. I didn't even really think about it that way. It's like, oh,
well, I hadn't thought about it that way till now. So
yeah, well,
fingers crossed.
Well, yeah, all I needed. Thank you for the spark of hope.
I'm still on Claudia Gray for telling the story of Leia's in universe end.
I love that idea. I think that is absolutely what I want them to do.
I love
because I don't think I want to see it on screen.
No, I want to see episode 9 and then read Claudia's novel about what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm down for
and have more it Claudia be Gray. Like referred to, but not
detailed.
Detailed, yeah.
Yeah,
I think 100% it's the right way to do it. Okay, so this is just a one-shot sentence, which is you are going to get a one-shot Marvel comic. Centered around Cassian Andor and K2SO and how they met. And okay. It's coming out in August.
I love these ideas, right? The one-shot C-3PO, how he got his red arm. The one-shot of how K2SO and Cassian met. But why do they make it so hard to keep track of them? That's Agreed. The only problem is like, okay, it's a one-shot, which means I have to go track it down. It's not going to show up in any of my subscriptions. And the Comixology referral engine isn't good enough to suggest these things promptly. The whole Dr. Aphra series, I didn't get in until the fourth issue because I just missed that it had finally launched.
Yeah, comics in general frustrate me. Like, I don't feel like this is just a Star Wars problem. This is
it's not. You're right.
This is like the life. This is why, like, every kid who grew up really loving comic books was just at the store on whether it was Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever day all new comics landed. Because if you didn't keep up with them week to week, it was just impossible pre-internet to, like, you were stuck. So you had to show up every Tuesday. And now with the internet, we think we know more about when these things are showing up in our lives. But look, it takes a long time between trades for any property. Like, I keep having to go back and reread all the sagas, like, because it's so long between saga trades that I'm like, I don't remember what happened. And sometimes I feel that way about the Star Wars ones too, like, especially when it comes to what in the fresh hell order I should read these in, and which ones are part of which series. So yeah, I could use like a giant wall chart.
I have always read comics in trades, so I'm that weirdo that I just wait. I just wait until just I can wait. Binge read the whole darn thing.
But even then, they don't tell you when the trades come out.
Oh, I know.
Like you go into Comixology and you search Star Wars and you get like a few of the current stuff and then a ton of Legends stuff. Some of it's in German. And it's like, I just want to know, what are the Star Wars in canon comics that are out that I don't have yet or are coming out soon? Like, that shouldn't be so hard.
I'm with you, having just gotten into Marvel Unlimited for the first time, and it took me 15 minutes to find the Darth Vader comic I wanted to read.
Yes.
But at the same time, I personally haven't experienced this because I don't read a lot of comics anymore. Saga, actually, funny enough, is the one I keep up with because it's one of my favorite things in the world at the moment. And that I just look up on Amazon for the next trade, and it usually has a date, and I just order it, and it shows up at my door. I've never personally found comics to be an easy thing to keep up with. But I will tough it out because that Darth Vader book was so damn good.
Yeah, it was.
And finally, it wouldn't be Let's Talk About Star Wars without some weird YouTube footage that Jenny found, thanks to Gizmodo. You should watch this, I think, before maybe somebody finds out about it and the rights go away. But there is a Cinefamily, which is just one of those weird sort of little LA institutions, put together a 95-minute film comprised of Star Wars footage in our culture. And it goes everywhere from like weird parodies, behind the scene clips, like news clips. Like, I'm not even sure it's family friendly. So maybe screen it first, because like there have been a lot of Star Wars things. And it's just like, I watched the first 5 minutes of it and then I realized like, I'm just going to have to get really drunk and watch the rest of it, because it is insane. But it's on YouTube now. It's called Weird, it's like Weird Wondrous Star Wars. Let me see what the exact title of it is. We should put the link in the show notes. It is bizarre. It was uploaded by God, everything's so, it was uploaded by Cinefamily. And I'm looking for like a title of it so I can.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars mixtape.
Yeah, it's insane. So get a bunch of your friends, throw this up on your TV, and start passing the booze or the candy or whatever it is that makes you giggle sillily, and watch this, because this is amazing.
This I needed this. Where was this in college when I would frequently spend hours on the couch doing nothing?
It was called cable access television back then.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I watched 5 minutes of this and I feel like, I don't know, like I've watched the video from The Ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
So proceed at your own caution. It is super weird. It is. Oh, yeah.
I just jumped in and saw a clip of Elliot Gould talking to Harrison Ford, who's trying not to let him into his apartment. I have no idea what that was from. Yeah. Or what it was about.
You could go to any point in this video and find something just really bizarre. I'm going to play it if it's still online at my Star Wars party. It's just like silent background.
That's perfect for that.
Yeah, because it's 95 minutes long. So anyway, pretty great.
All right. Well, let's get to our big spoiler discussion today, which is going to focus on the Aftermath trilogy, because, spoiler alert, all three of us have finally finished reading them.
Mm-hmm. I like to think of it as the Snap Wexley story.
Oh,
I agree.
Do you? Okay. All right.
That's accurate.
I mean, it is. It is also many other characters' story.
Yeah, but it's really the Wexleys.
They really want you to care about the Wexleys.
Like, you know, the Star Wars stories are the Skywalker family story. This is the Wexley family story.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, it is.
For good and ill.
The worst part about it is that I'm not joking. Like, I'm not just working in my normal Snap Wexley comment. It really is kind of the Wexley family story.
Yep.
No, it absolutely is. Not the two characters I care the most about in this trilogy, but certainly seems to revolve around them the most.
Also,
all right, yeah.
Also, spoiler alert, but Mr. Bones,
pour one out.
All right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Should we do a quick roundtable of verdicts about the series itself before we dive into details?
Yes.
Garrett, you go first.
I'll go first. It is a slow and I would argue arduous burn, but damn it, that ending is really worth it. It's really worth it, guys.
Yeah. I would say that the only thing that ever really convinced me to read this was the idea that the end of this trilogy would put you on Jakku to figure out why all those, you know, dreadnoughts and Star Destroyers came falling down out of the sky, and you were not disappointed. That scene was awesome. I probably didn't need 2¾ books to get there. It's an argument for graphic novels.
Ooh, that's all right. You put my own thoughts better than I could put them. that's you're right. That's exactly what I want from this. And Tom.
Yeah.
I really like Chuck Wendig. He is a great guy. He's a good writer. You should absolutely check out the Miriam Black series. So I am predisposed to want to like these. And I know I liked Aftermath itself a lot more than other people, but I felt like I saw the constraints he was working within and the direction he was trying to go. And I kind of feel like Jenny, you're right. Maybe not even a graphic novel. Maybe if it was just published as one story,
right?
That a lot of the reactions to Aftermath would have been more positive, because Life Debt is a lot more fun. And Empire's End is really good. And I liked Aftermath. So I just felt like it kept getting better and better. And Aftermath only suffers in people's perceptions because they're getting a third of a story and they're feeling like they should be getting a whole story.
Yeah. And here's what I would say about, and this opinion covers all of the new canon Star Wars books. Small stories thoroughly told. Right? Like, look at Thrawn, right? Thrawn is a thoroughly told and thoroughly examined period of time where you're not allowed to say a lot, even about this one really interesting character, because everything is being saved for something else. You are getting massive explanations of time periods because you can't actually talk about other time periods. And if I had executive editor of fiction at Lucasfilm, Jennifer Heddle, on this show, what I would say is, well, then just make them shorter. Like, don't force very good author. And I have to say, of all the Star Wars books I've read, Chuck Wendig can write his butt off. I do not want to give the impression that these books are not well written. They are impeccably written. They are fast reads. They are excellently plotted. The dialogue is good, which is not always the case in Star Wars books. So, like, let me give a full-throated hip hip hooray to Chuck Wendig for churning these out so damn quickly too, right? So I'm 100% on board with that. My complaint always goes back to the big meeting where everybody sat at a table and, like, they dumped all the Star Wars stories in the middle and you had to grab as fast as you could to get your piece of it. And some people ended up with very small pieces. And I think that is starting to wear on me just a little bit, especially in comparison with my experience of the Legends, the what they call the dark times of Star Wars, where only the Legends books were keeping it going. And that was just a wide open field on which to play. And this is a very narrow.
Imagine how much worse it would be for the movies. If Legends was still canon. I know it really upsets people that Legends are not canon, but the constraint right now is we haven't told 8 and 9 yet. So, you know, and we're still telling Star Wars Rebels. So hold off. Can you imagine if the constraint was also on top of that?
No.
And all of these other stories have been told in Legends. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right that it shows in Aftermath. I think Life Debt found that ability to tell a really compelling story within the time period, the swath that is available to tell the story. It was a self-contained story that was really fun.
Yeah, Life Debt was interesting because I think it succeeded in that. I think the liberation of Kashyyyk could have been its own novel by itself, and it's what that particular section of that book is awesome. But then there's these other big chunks of the book that had to tie into what came before it and set up for what's coming after it.
And by Life Debt, I'm enjoying the crew, right? I've gotten to know Temin and Mr. Bones and everybody. And Aftermath has to spend a lot of time introducing me to those folks.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is getting personal now. I was mostly talking about I just wanted to tear the pages out when I got to anything political. I was just, I don't care. Get me back to Kashyyyk. Get me back to Kashyyyk now.
I feel like my Twitter bio should read, "I don't care about Mon Mothma. Stop trying to make me."
I didn't mind that stuff as much.
I at the end of the third book, I guess I cared slightly about Mon Mothma. Slightly.
I have to say that was a bigger drag for me in Bloodline. The political stuff in Bloodline bothered me more than the political stuff in Life Debt.
I guess I didn't mind it as much in Bloodline because so much of it is told from Leia's perspective. And she is annoyed by the political side of things. Uh-huh. Whereas when we get into Mon Mothma's perspective, she's actually into it. And I'm just like, you're useless. What you're doing is useless. I would like to go back to the gunplay on the forest planet, please. Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's a mistake. Here's the thing, like, again, and I refer to the Legends things only because I read so many of those books and I have such the vast map of what they were. In Legends, you had books that were overtly political, like The Courtship of Princess Leia. You had books that were much more razzmatazz, and the politics was minimized, like the Timothy Zahn books. And so I felt like they did a pretty decent job of separating that out. Now, of course, this is my 14-year-old memory, so it could be hazy. But here, it is definitely crammed together in a way that makes me wish it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. And I, the same thing to come back, though. I Tom, you're absolutely right. I, you know, while I found myself having issues with like the political scenes in these books, I absolutely fell in love with the crew. Some of these characters are right up there with you know, household names from the original trilogy. For me specifically, Sinjir. A character that I kept turning the page at some points just to find out what happened to him next.
And we end up, we end up seeing the birth of the First Order. We see Hux, being sent out into the black, so to speak.
Yeah, we do.
Go ahead. Sorry.
We're bouncing around so much, but the final few chapters of Empire's End are, oh goodness gracious, everything that happens in the bunker on Jakku, mm-hmm. the Emperor's bunker on Jakku, just has the Star Wars villain fanboy in me just reeling, because it's like stumbling. I don't know. It's like stumbling across one of the temples in Indiana Jones, except you actually know what this forgotten society actually is about.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And what I would say is, once again, the ending of Thrawn was terrific. Because the ending of Thrawn led you into a vast and unknown universe, and the ending of Empire's End did the exact same thing. And I sense those stories are going to converge in some property or another. But I guess what I would best describe myself as damned impatient, because I didn't necessarily need this backstory. I wanted to get right to get to Star Wars things that I don't know about. I'm sort of like, look at how well Lost Stars wove a story around stuff you already knew with compelling new characters, right? Like, that was incredible. That was a genuine achievement. As a trope, I'm sort of getting over it. Like, get me to places I don't know now.
I think a fair criticism. It's also, it sounds like almost like a compliment, right? It's like, this is,
well, yeah. It's an impossible thing to satisfy you with until they put out The Last Jedi. Basically what you're saying, Jenny, is I just want to see effing Last Jedi next.
Yeah, exactly. That's fair.
And it also has me hoping that all questions are answered in Last Jedi and nothing's left for episode 9.
Oh, they won't be though.
Just so we can get rolling with the books. But yeah,
I think we're going to get a Darth Vader is my father moment, but we're not going to get you have a sister. That's going to be saved for 9.
Blankety.
Expletive.
So characters we're clearly going to see more of in some fashion include, go Tom.
Snap Wexley.
Well, yeah.
Well, he's already making Fast and Furious appearances in the Poe Dameron comic.
Yep.
Yes, that's right. I don't know that we'll see that many more elsewhere, unfortunately. I don't know that we'll see too much of the Wexleys or Sinjir or any of those folks. You think so?
I think we're going to see Rae Sloane.
In the movies or in other books?
Somewhere. I'm not committing to the movies, but Admiral, Grand Admiral, or whatever she was, Rae Sloane, who was the primary-ish antagonist throughout this mm-hmm. entire series, went off to a very interesting place with a very interesting destiny that completely ties into the First Order. And so we are going to, like, I will 100% say we are going to hear about her and read about her again in some other property.
Rae Whether Snoke? Or
not. Well, yeah. Like, the whole, can we really spoil? Are we really going for it?
Yes, I mean, wait, full on spoilers.
Yes. Yeah.
Didn't we say, like, in our second episode that we're not going to hold off on spoilers? Sorry, folks. Right.
If it's out there, we're spoiling it. Yes.
Yeah.
They basically have a giant satellite dish pointed to the unknown regions, and they're getting these weird messages. And let's be clear, those weird messages are absolutely from Snoke in some fashion. Like, mm-hmm. he is this unknown, the unknown region's bad, big bad that everybody in all the books is referring to, the Thrawn books, the thing that the Thrawn's people are so freaked out about. This book, the discussion with the Emperor, like the unknown regions where the First Order regroups and trains and everything is where they meet Snoke. That is, in my mind, that is 100% solid. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you get to, I could see a whole new trilogy about what happens with the First Order once they deem that, you know, fit for public.
Well, and the whole Thrawn book points to the idea of a race outside of the Republic.
Yeah,
that has its own machinations. And Snoke, I'm not saying Snoke comes from Thrawn's race. I'm saying that there are obviously more than just Thrawn's race out there.
Yeah, it's a whole unknown region of space filled with all new big bads. And I am waiting for that. That is what I mean very specifically when I say I want to be dazzled by things I don't know about. Like, I'm talking about what all of these books are very carefully pointing to. So that's
fine. So Rey Sloane is not Rey's mom.
Well, you know, I kind of want to know that for sure, because they have the same darn name.
Well, she's, I mean, I guess she could come back to Jakku later, but it's R-A-E though, not R-E-Y.
Well, I mean, details.
Yeah, it's like not maybe, the same name.
Yeah, but it's the same. You pronounce it the same. I'm just saying, like,
I mean, how many people name their child a homonym for their own name?
I'm named after Jenny Jerome Churchill. I don't know. You know, I think that.
Yeah, but you're not named G-E-N-N-I.
No, but she was.
She was named G-E-N-N-I-E?
No, Sharon. This is going into English.
OK, yeah, yeah. Stop.
But I think Rey Sloane is a distant candidate to be Rey's mom.
No, because I think she would have been, I don't know. I feel like she's headed out, not back to Jakku later.
Who says she didn't put her kid on a thing with someone else and drop them off?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it's a distant possibility.
I think Rey's Palpatine's daughter. That's my current feeling.
That's dark.
It's granddaughter, maybe.
Yeah.
I at one point I was wondering if that's where they were going with Gallius Rax. It was like, is he freaking Palpatine's son? What's happening here?
Yeah.
Turned out not to be the case, but
yeah, they didn't do much with him, did they? In the end, he just
waiting for the big like, and Gallius Rex is, or Gallius Rex also has, and well, it didn't really happen. He's what he also had was the ship full of troopers that.
Yeah.
Right. He, Gallius Rax, it turned out he's just Aladdin gone down a much darker path.
Yeah. One jump ahead of the Emperor. Sorry. I shouldn't have done that to a Disney fan. One of the things that I was going to say before is there is this thread throughout Empire's End of Gallius Rax getting messages from the dead Emperor Palpatine, and some of them are sentinels, but then some of them are also basically holograms. And I find that like very Snokish in a weird way, which is like some guy hologramming it from beyond the grave about his contingency plans, which is like, dude, control freak much? Yeah. You're dead. Give it up. I think that to me was like very resonant of the way that Snoke communicates with these two guys, and I wonder if that has anything to do with anything. There's my specific bet.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, is that Snoke's thing, or is it the Emperor's thing, and Snoke is aware of it and co-ops it? Come Force Awakens.
Yeah, I totally see Snoke aping it, right?
Yeah,
or moning it, or whatever species he is.
Also, what are the chances one of these Sentinels shows up in The Last Jedi? Because I really want to see one fully realized now. I want to see some droid with a creepy, ghostly Palpatine face running around.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in my head. It looks cool. Maybe it'll look really dumb. I don't know. But
nothing in these books is an accident. The only question is whether they refer to other properties or the movies.
I think the biggest problem with the Aftermath trilogy is that they won't allow much that plugs into the movies. Mm-hmm. There were no real revelations. So when the big revelation of Galleus Rex is, and this is how Hux was able to have his own First Order troopers, I'm like, oh, that's the level of revelations in here. And as much as I'd like to see something bigger, I don't think it's in there.
Yeah. I would agree.
So I haven't read Thrawn, and there is a direct Thrawn reference near the end of this book. Does that tie into the Thrawn novel? I don't even know the time, like the time period that the Thrawn novel takes place.
Yeah, it ties in. do you care?
I'll read it eventually.
And the Thrawn novel takes place pre-New Hope.
Mm-hmm. Pre-New Hope. Okay, but post the events of Rebels?
Kind of concurrent, because it like Lost Stars, it spans a longer period of time.
Yeah,
gotcha. Well,
but it is interesting to note that Thrawn is still being referenced in the Aftermath series.
Having not read Thrawn, the reference at the end of Aftermath leads me to believe that Thrawn could show up at some point in the new trilogy.
Well, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen to him at Rebels, and Rebels has now moved to a time period that I think is after all the events of the novel. So,
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Clearly the Thrawn that I'm throwing in with, is the one that's in Rebels. Like that to me has been a really great, consistent interpretation of the character. The Thrawn book just clearly falls into that same category for me of a lot of writing about a very little bit of real estate.
In fact, that leads us pretty nicely to our email.
Mm-hmm. So we got an email from JP, and that's how he identifies himself. I have never read any of the Star Wars books, but after listening to your podcast, I thought, what a great way to expand on my reading. My question is, where to start? There are so many available. Is there a good comprehensive list of books that are canon and that are in chronological order, or do you have any suggestions? And I will say, yes, if you go to StarWars.com and you dig enough, there will be something very professionally done. Or if you go to the bookstore and open up any one of the books, that any one of the new canon Star Wars books, they actually have it right in the front couple of pages, which is like where these books come in with the movies, in what order are they, and you could do no wrong by reading them in that order. But if you want a less professional, more emotional, and much shorter thing, you can always go to Medium and look me up, Jenny Josephson. It's, I think, I'm at JennyJ23 on Medium, I think, I hope. And I have a thing called Let's Read About Star Wars, the book list, which I have just updated to go along with this podcast. And it's not very spoilery, but if you don't want to be spoiled, just maybe glance at the covers, scroll down and glance at the covers and then read it later. And then also I have a Medium article. Yeah, it is at JennyJ23. Jenny, which just says, reminder, Jenny read Thrawn and she had to write about her feelings. Because it was an intense experience for me. So, yeah. So there is some writing from this podcast about the Star Wars books. And then, of course, there is lots of it all over the internet. But, yeah, there you go.
I very much agree with your order here, which is just keeping with the tradition on this podcast of yelling Lost Stars at the top of our lungs anytime anyone asks where to start. It's just so damn good.
It's just that good.
Also, when I finished Empire's End, I immediately flipped through Lost Stars to the final chapters and reread them again, because I was hazy on how detailed it was about the Battle of Jakku, and I'm like, did it mention Galleus Rex or any of this other crap? And no, like the only crossover reference I could find was Grand Moff Rand. Mm-hmm. And other than that, they do the most amazing gymnastics routine you've ever seen in your life about not mentioning any details from Empire's End. It's rather impressive. Because it hasn't been written
yet, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, it hadn't. At that time, only Aftermath was out. And while Jenny, I know you spent a good amount of our Aftermath talking about how you're kind of burnt out on it, I looked at that and I was just kind of impressed.
Just like, that wow, is a fair reaction.
This mucks nothing up and is still... it's still a satisfying read at the end of it.
Yeah, it's a ballet.
Yeah, so at the end of all of this, at the end of our long-winded Aftermath discussion, I really just want to say that when in God's name are we getting a follow-up to the characters in Lost Stars? Please and thank you.
Somebody lock Claudia Gray in a room and just don't let her out until she writes two books that are very necessary.
I don't think it's her.
Isn't she writing another Star Wars book? Not, unfortunately, Our Lost Stars, friends, as far as I know. But
let me consult the Force.
I also don't think it's her call on a sequel to Lost Stars. So lock whoever's job.
Yeah, she's writing Leia.
Oh, right. That's
the journey to Star Wars, Last Jedi, Leia, Princess of Alderaan.
Wait, what? Really?
Mm-hmm. It's out September 1st.
Oh my God. There are just so many books.
It's about 16-year-old Leia set before New Hope.
Wow.
I bet that will actually be a pretty rad read. Claudia Gray's writing it. I'm looking forward to...
It's going to be 400 pages. It's going to be a rad read.
I'm looking forward to Inferno Squad because I'm pretty jazzed for Battlefront 2 and the whole... The whole setup for that game's campaign sounds very, very much my cup of tea. So I'm looking forward to the Christy Golden novelization.
Yeah, I agree. I also I'm pretty up on Journal of the Wills and the Baze and Shirut book that's coming out. Although I wish it was longer.
That's next on my list, I think. Yeah. Sorry if you were hoping I'd read the original Timothy Zahn trilogy. I really want to read.
No, that's okay. That's fair. You'll get it for your. I'll send it to you for your birthday or Christmas or Star Wars holiday.
No, it's fine. It's at some point.
Oh yeah, we just had the 40th anniversary of Star Wars May 25th. We need to acknowledge that before we're done here.
Oh yeah, that's right. We were almost going to do a podcast on that day, and then we didn't. Someday we'll get around to actually doing podcasts on the day of the anniversaries. But you know what? Everyone else did, so you were okay. Happy 40th Star Wars anniversary to you, gentlemen.
You too, Jenny.
Yeah, it's pretty rad. I mean, it's been actually, if you think about it, all of my life.
Yep. Yeah, happy Star Wars to all.
7 years of my life.
Star Wars is apparently 10 years older than me, so.
Now we all know how old we are.
Yeah. Everyone do math. Do math. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Let's Talk About Star Wars. Thank you all so very much for tuning in. If you like the show and you want to support it, we do have a Patreon up over at patreon.com/Let's Talk About Star Wars. Keep those iTunes reviews coming if you're an iTunes listener, because that always helps out as well. And a big thanks to the Andrew Allen Trio for our intro and outro music. Find more of their work at andrewallentrio.com. Around the table, Jenny Josephson, other than medium.com, where you're writing a comprehensive list of what the heck order to read Star Wars books in. Where can folks find you?
Well, you can find me at behind the scenes of a podcast called Make Me Smart, which features Kyra Dahl and Molly Wood trying to make sense of this world that we live in one episode at a time. That's marketplace.org/makemesmart. And you know, I do a lot for that show, and I really enjoy it, and I really enjoy having to super smart hosts, because if you can't work for one super smart host, at least you can work for two others. Anyway, there you go. That's me.
Tom, how about yourself?
I wrote a science fiction book about time travel called Pilot X. I do a Twin Peaks podcast called Damn Fine Podcast. And of course, everything else I do is at TomMerritt.com.
I don't do a Twin Peaks podcast, but I just started watching it and I'm confused. But other than that, you can find me talking about how confused I am about Twin Peaks on my Twitter account at Garrett Art. Every other podcast I can be found at amove.tv, Hearthstone, Into the Nexus, a lot of Blizzard games, stuff like that. Go and check it out. That's going to do it. Until next time, may the Force be with you.
Always.
Star Wars mixtape.